For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford in the cave with me here in studio, Mr. Mark Tuttle, and sitting in his nice cozy little den at home, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. So, you know, we're kind of social distancing, but we have reasons behind it. And so, you know, we're going to make do the best we can because we're in a COVID world. We are looking at all kinds of things that are, you know, not what we're used to, not what we've had to deal with. And it's not going to change overnight. So how do we, as Catholics, as Christians, as Americans, as humans, deal with this?
Yeah, there's the old Chinese proverb, or actually not even a proverb, it's an old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
And
we are definitely living in interesting times. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, it's kind of funny. The more things change and the more topsy-turvy things become, the more I think you have to look at those constant things, those unchanging things, those things that never seem to waver, that never seem to change, because there is a whole world sort of outside the world, a whole world that encapsulates the world, that it itself stays constant. And as Catholics, I think we have to kind of keep our eye on those sort of eternal, unchangeable things in the midst of the changes and everything that's going on in our world.
Yeah, I think the term that comes to mind for me that in certain Catholic academic spheres is the perennial philosophy that can be attributed to things like the Scholastics' attempt at it, or and Aquinas and others, to lay forth immutable principles. And then part of our task, I think, right here in the Catholic Cave is to share, discover what those perennial principles are by some of the great thinkers in the Catholic intellectual tradition, and then see how they might apply in the current setting. And I think there's a lot going on. I mean, we're now at the on the Catholic Cave, we're at the point where we've already been through a lockdown, a very substantial lockdown, with all the economic and social and psychological and even spiritual impact of that. We're approaching sort of the late summer, if you will, and now we're looking at maybe things have begun to reopen, and yet maybe they're starting to tighten up again. And so there's just a lot of uncertainty out there. And thought maybe let's spend a little bit of time, Mark and Kent, and let's maybe look at some features of what's going on and how we might, as Catholics, begin to look at that.
Right, because, you know, the unchangeable things, unfortunately, a lot of those principles, a lot of, I would say, Catholic philosophy is somewhat coming under fire. And as much as I guess it's coming to the surface in the pandemic, it's nothing new. You know, Catholic philosophy, Catholic thought, Catholicism itself has been countercultural and not exactly in vogue for quite a while. So the world out there is a modern world. It's a world infected by the heresy of modernism, and that really puts a lot of Catholic thought sort of outside the mainstream. And these days, when your thoughts and your actions are outside the mainstream, you're kind of putting yourself out there with the target on your chest.
Yeah, so where do you want to begin, Mark? I mean, what do you think about, let's take a look at, I want to take maybe a little bit look at, say, some of the part of the political order, especially as it may be a subcategory around socialism. You know, there's been a lot of talk about socialism, Democrat Socialist Party, and socialism has a particular definition or set of understandings as it pertains to Catholicism, because we've had We've had our many papal documents have addressed socialism, and my reading of them is that they really kind of condemn it.
Right, and there's some particular reasons why, and honestly, it's kind of at the beginnings, and therefore the foundations of Catholic social justice, that those particular aspects of socialism, the Church really looks at in depth in the encyclical Rerum Novarum.
Yes, which translates into English for us. Who don't always have the command of Latin that maybe we once had as practicing Catholics. Rerum Novarum really means on the condition of the working class, and it was issued by Pope Leo XIII, who's truly one of the great holy fathers that we've been blessed to have so far, because much of his writing was so prescient at the time and extremely valuable even today, and it was promulgated on May 15th of 1891, and 1891 is a really that late 19th century where we're dealing with. I'm going to point out at least two streams of thought that, and Mark, you probably have others as well, but two things that are really emerging. One of which is directly addressed in this encyclical Rerum Novarum is the rise of Marxism and Marxism. You have Karl Marx and his writings, Communist Manifesto, Das Kapital, which gives rise to ideas like, or political systems, economic systems such as socialism and communism. That's one big impulse, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But the other one that's also very, very disruptive is Charles Darwin. You have Darwin's writings are just gaining a lot of traction. And that's going to give rise to a whole, I would say, another set of not just understandings, but problematic understandings of the human origins of the human person, and lots of evils flow out of some of Darwin's writing, especially in the area of like eugenics.
Right.
But let's go back to Rerum Novarum. Where do you want to start?
Well, you know, we at one point had gone through a sort of catalog of errors that you had, a book on modernism that laid out questions that were coming up with modernism. And my understanding, there's a whole section on there on Rerum Novarum with some questions to be addressed. So do you have the book at your fingertips, Tim?
Yeah, let me throw some out there. Yeah, let me also recommend for our listeners, yeah, the book is available from Pan Books, which is a great publisher of really reliably, vibrantly Catholic books. And this book, they've done the heavy lifting. It's called The Popes Against Modern Eras, 16 Papal Documents, Hard-Hitting Condemnation of Many of Today's Most Noxious Errors. A little bit noxious, not just errors, they're noxious, Mark. So it's got a really neat picture of Pope Leo XIII giving a blessing from like the papal throne chair, as well as wearing the papal tiara, which we really don't, you know, we haven't seen that really in 60 plus years. I think Pope Pius the 12th maybe was the last one to wear, or maybe John the 23rd, St. John the 23rd. But okay, so let me throw out a couple of things. Let's start with a couple of things. One is, as with any papal encyclical, it's laid out systematically by sections, and then different sections are numbered. So if you're familiar with like looking at sacred scripture, we refer to in sacred scripture the book, the chapter, the verse or verses. Here with papal encyclicals and other church documents, we'll name the document, and then we can always refer to by number to the particular paragraph that we might be interested in. So the first thing is that I'll throw out here is that, and maybe I'll share this here a little bit, but one of the first things that's pointed out is this, that, and these are sort of little headlines, if you will, summaries, that socialists abolish private property. That's one of the impulses. And it says here in the encyclical, it says, The socialists, I'm kind of paraphrasing a little bit, the socialists exciting the envy of the poor towards the rich contend that it is necessary to do away with private possessions of goods and in its place to make the goods of individuals common to all, and that the men who preside over a municipality or who direct the entire state with a capital S, should act as administrators of these goods. They hold that by such a transfer of private goods from private individuals to the community, they can cure the present evil through dividing wealth and benefits equally among the citizens. I think that's a pretty good summary, Mark, of what the general impulse is of socialism.
Right, and I think it speaks to the particular error that the church is condemning, and that is the dissolving of private property. So the question then that comes up is, why is the church so insistent that owning private property is a good? What is it about private property that goes along with our humanity and our being as humans that says that no, we should own property? And what is it about kind of dissolving that in some way is I would say an attack to a certain extent on what it means to be human?
Well, I guess the first thing that comes to my mind when you say no private property is, does that mean we go down to 9 commandments? Because that eliminates thou shalt not steal.
Well, right. Well, and one of the, one of the 7 deadly sins was mentioned right at the beginning of that, incited by envy. So, when you look at that, the attitude behind it seems to be fueled by envy, which, those 7 deadly sins are called deadly sins because they're root sins. They're sins that lead to all sorts of other sins. And, by stoking and firing up envy, I think there's a huge, huge potential for even more evils that go beyond just sort of a turning over of the political order.
Yeah, I would say here, I think this is helpful. So, again, in Rerum Novarum, this is in paragraph 9, it says, when the worker places his energy and his labor at the disposal of another, he does so for the purpose of getting the means necessary for livelihood. He seeks in return for the work done, accordingly, a true and full right, not only to demand his wage, but to dispose of it as he sees fit. Therefore, if he saves something by restricting expenditures and invests his savings in a piece of land in order to keep the fruit of his thrift more safe, a holding of this kind is certainly nothing else than his wage under a different form. And on this account, land which the worker thus buys is necessarily under his full control as much as the wage which he earned by his labor. So that points us to this this notion of that socialism has to make use of a kind of confiscation or seizure of private property to then place it in sort of a common holding for bureaucrats to administer its redistribution.
Right, and I think that leads to one of the evils, and we're coming up to time for a break, so we'll have to talk about this after the break. But it fundamentally, the reason that's so evil is it's a denial of humans' creative nature. It's a denial of our ability to imitate God by creatively creating. So with that, we're going to have to take a break. We'll be right back here on The Catholic Cave.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
And welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here in the studio with Kent Blanford, and there in his cozy little chair, in his cozy little office, in his cozy little cave, is Tim O'Donnell. And we are talking today about socialism and Rerum Novarum and the church's principles and what the church, what ultimately it is that the church is objecting to. And I think, you know, Tim, when we're talking about socialism, I think it's important that we're kind of precise about the definition of socialism and what it is that the church is condemning, because there's a whole bunch of thought and a whole bunch of people that are calling themselves socialists and a whole lot of other people that are calling other people socialists that I don't think are necessarily committing the same errors that the church is pointing to. So we were just talking about kind of one of the large objections of the church, which is the abolishing of private property that goes along with socialism. And, you know, I think the deep evil that goes along with the idea of abolishing private property is you are denying and stifling man's creative nature. So man is made in the image and likeness of God. And part of being made in the image and likeness of God is that we are by nature creative beings. As an image of the Trinity, there's an aspect of us that projects ourselves outward, and then because of that, we are able to create. We are able to sort of extend ourselves beyond who we are to create something long and lasting. And we do that. We do that through family life, but we also do that through work. We do that through creating something for others that others find value in, and then we expect remuneration for that value. And so by confiscating private property and doing away with that, you really are denying that sort of creative nature to man, and you're stifling it. And, you know, I would hate to, in a lot of ways, I would hate to live in a society where nobody has the impetus and nobody is sort of inspired to create, because there's no reward in it.
Yeah, in fact, let me tie in, that's such an excellent point. Let me tie in something that's going to sound maybe a little provocative from Rerum Novarum, and then it's this statement, and then I'll share a little section from paragraph 26. And the thrust of the argument here in this paragraph is that men are by nature unequal. Men are by nature unequal.
Ooh, that does not fly well in today's day and age. No. I mean, boy, you say men are unequal, you're likely to have. We're going to get a lot of hate mail, Kent. We're going to get the mailboxes are going to be full here.
That's Tim O'Donnell at no.
and just to be clear here, that is not those are not Tim's words. Tim is reading an encyclical from one of the popes. So men are by nature not equal. Men are by nature unequal. That is something that is coming from one of the popes, and you know that obviously sort of flies in, you know, what we all take as one of the founding principles of our country.
Yes, and so the Holy Father, Pope Leo the 13th of blessed memory, means this in this equality in a particular way. And here's what he's talking about. He's not talking about a denial of the equality found in the dignity of each human person. Rather, he's pointing to this, and I quote, he says, "There are truly very great and very many natural differences among men. Neither the talents, nor the skill, nor the health, nor the capacities of all are the same, and unequal fortune follows of itself upon necessary inequality in respect to these endowments. And clearly this condition of things is adapted to benefit both individuals and the community. For to carry on its affairs, community life requires varied aptitudes and diverse services. And to perform these diverse services, men are impelled most by differences in individual property holdings." So here we're talking about, you know, that people we're born with different innate talents and potentialities, and that it makes a difference, and that's for the benefit of creating, of having a diverse humanity, that we're not all identical. And so that's what I think what the Holy Father is pointing to here. And you can see it in there's two places you can, there are three ways you can kind of see how this might apply, say, in the political or economic order. And it, there are three things that kind of point to the same thing. It's most commonly referred to as like the 80-20 rule, where, you know, 20% of your, say, labor force generates 80% of your output, or 20% of your customers create 80% of your revenues. That 80-20 rule. It's also similar. It's also Price's Law. And also there's another one called the Pareto Principle, P-A-R-E-T-O Principle. These all three maintain that there are amongst us, and it's across human endeavors, that a small part of your labor will generate a far disproportionate amount of your output. And that's sort of the 80-20 rule. And I think that's an example of where we're not all equal in the sense of skills, talents, but also we'll find later in Rerum Novarum, a key principle is industriousness. In other words, how much effort we put into something will determine definitely determine or at least influence how skilled one can become. To become a master carpenter, one isn't simply born into it. Now, you may have some innate talents in that direction, but you do have to apply yourself over time with learning and practice to actually become, say, an expert carpenter.
Right. And I'm reminded of the in high school, we all had to take maybe I'm aging myself a little bit and, kind of giving away, what my age range here is. But we all had to take the ASVAB, the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. And so this was this long questionnaire that you took and it was given to the military recruiters. So it may be particular for where I grew up, but I'm thinking it was pretty universal, I think, for people of my age. It was an aptitude test on a wide range of things. And one of them, the one that I scored, like I think I scored in the 10th percentile, was manual dexterity. So the ability to manipulate things with my fingers. So right off the bat, I was told by my high school guidance counselors, if you're planning on a career as a secretary, or if you're planning on a career as a technical surgeon, of course, now I'm not sure it's true, but you might want to think again, because you just don't have the manual dexterity skills to be able to do those things. And then, of course, other kids were told, you don't have the right skill set to do this, or you don't. So there was sort of this sorting that went on after mm-hmm. you took this ASVAB. It wasn't shocking to us. We didn't revolt about it. Well, I can do whatever I want because I'm just as good at everything as everybody else is. You kind of know, by the time you get to high school, that there are some kids that are really, really good at math. There are other kids that are really, really good at debate. There are other kids that are very, very athletic. There are other kids that are very, very musically inclined. And we all have different skills, and no, we are not all equal. We are, there's a wide variety to what we can do. And part of that also, and I think this goes back to what you were talking about, Pareto's Law, there are some that are born natural leaders. There are some that are able to inspire the work of others and, will kind of rise to be sort of to a certain extent, a managerial or a class that's going to be able to kind of lead other people. And that's all natural. In a lot of ways, it rubs us the wrong way, but that's natural, and there's really nothing wrong with that.
I think we all have examples. I can think of like my younger brother, Sean, and from the time he was 5 years old, it was very, very evident that he had just a natural gift and actual natural inclination. I mean, he was truly interested in mechanical things. And so he was always taking things apart, motors and toys and stuff like that, and then putting them back together. And then, he's been a mechanic, automotive mechanic his whole life, and then went to school and all that. He does a lot of the really advanced stuff. So we can see that God places within us, and this is why discernment is so important about our vocation, about where we have some natural interests and natural talents and abilities that do require them to be developed through time and effort, but that certainly lead us into discovering where God wants to place us. And socialism, to a certain extent, as it's mentioned here in Rerum Novarum, one of the things that happens is you begin the process of eliminating or greatly eliminate or diminish private property is that you are denying the laborer the fruit of his or her labor. You're also disincentivizing performance as well, because if you're not going to be able to put in extra effort, if the extra effort doesn't result in enhanced wages for you, then what's the point of putting it in? But I want to connect something back, if I could, before we have to take another break, is this. It goes back to what you were talking about, Mark, about, and this is paragraph 12 of Pope Leo XIII's encyclical Rerum Novarum that we've been talking about, and it's this. The Holy Father brings up this point, that man must provide for his future. And it says here in part, this is even more clearly evident if the essential nature of human being is examined more closely, since man by his reason understands innumerable things, linking and combining the future with the present, and since he is master of his own actions, therefore under the eternal law and under the power of God, most wisely ruling all things, he rules himself by the foresight of his own counsel. Wherefore, it is in his power to choose the things which he considers best adapted to benefit him, not only in the present, but also in the future. And I think what's really important about that is that human beings plan for the future in a way that you don't see in any substantial way, of any sort of comparable way, across the animal kingdom. Some animals, like squirrels stock up nuts for the winter, acorns for the winter, but it's nothing at all in terms of a degree, even by degree, it's a whole different category, about how human beings can plan for the future and take steps here and now in the present in light of what we anticipate the future to be.
And guess what? We are going to have to hold that thought until the future, because we are up against another break. So we will take a break, and we will be back here on the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a ministry reaching out to Central Indiana and beyond. We have information available about what's happening in parishes here in the Hoosier Heartland, as well as access to the latest from Rome, plus apologetics and authentic Catholic teaching. We are your source for 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Kent Blanford and Timothy O'Donnell, and we are discussing Rerum Novarum and the Church's the different errors that the Church has pointed out with the ideology of socialism. And you were just, as we hit the break, Tim, you were just bringing up the idea that man by nature has this ability to plan for the future and to provide for himself for the future. I think the encyclical, it says, relying on his own counsel. There's a lot packed into that. Part of that is a right to be able to take care of yourself and your own, and not to be forced really to rely on somebody else for your own future well-being. But at the bottom of that is a part of, what is part of man's nature just as a rational creature, and that is the ability to project and see and forecast and kind of put two and two together to see what is going to happen in the future. And that really is one of the aspects of being human that A, sets us apart from the animals, but B, it also sets us apart from the angels, because the angels are universal intelligences. They are intelligences that are not confined to time or space. And so their intelligence doesn't really have this concept to a certain extent of past, present, and future. So this ability to live in the present, project into the future, and sort of create a world that's going to be suited for my future self, that's something that's really unique for mankind.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that aspect about the angels, because you're right. I mean, the angels don't need to, like, establish a 401k plan, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
That. But certainly, here's another interesting tie-in, Mark, on In Rerum Novarum. To that, maybe there's a couple of levels to it. One, I'm thinking of, this is really more constituent fundamental to what it means to live the moral life, that we as rational beings, having the faculty of reason, we can discern before we take action and ask ourselves a question, basic moral question, like, should I do this, right? Should I do this? And because we can deliberate about the future, that's what, if we're free to make a choice, that makes us responsible for our actions. And that responsibility for our actions is what earns us merit or punishment, because we're responsible for our actions. So that's, I think that's really important. The other thing I think that's really important too is when we, linking it back to this law, socialism as this, is it's one of its main projects is the loss of the surrender of private property to common property, is that when the individual person has private property, that is essential to being free, to having freedom. Because when you have private property, you can care for oneself and one's family, one's household, because you're free from being dependent upon an outside person or institution or political entity like a state, that that if you have no private property, then you are vulnerable to their demands and susceptible to them. And so it's a kind of, in Rerum Novarum, it actually refers to it as slavery. It's a kind of a loss of private property is a kind of enslavement, because you no longer have the means to provide for yourself, your household, now or in the future. So that's a critical tenet to be aware of, too.
Right. And Rerum Novarum even takes that farther and says, you know, when you have no private property, you have no freedom to take care of others. And there's a large part of Rerum Novarum that discusses the privilege and the freedom and the necessity to act out of human love for those that do have less than we do, or are living in difficult circumstances. You know, having private property frees you up to be able to fulfill your Christian obligation. So there's sort of a freedom to be able to be obliged there, which sounds strange to our modern ears. But nonetheless, you know, the ability to care for others presupposes your ability to have property and have wealth to be able to give to somebody else. And that's a huge part of Catholic social teaching, and that's a huge part of Rerum Novarum.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I mean, if you don't have any private property, like, what would you put in the collection basket at Mass? Right? You know, some well-wish, you know. Not much. I mean, the fact is that that is that gives us, and you know what, that gives us the freedom to and responsibility to find those persons and communities and organizations that we can, having saved some of the fruits of our labor, set aside, and the word something we use is tithing, to tithe towards helping the disadvantage and promoting those institutions that are authentically working for, whose mission is for the common good in light of Catholic teaching.
Right, and that's another large part of Rerum Novarum is the organizational side of society and how socialism tends to distort that by the government to a certain extent subsuming all private property and then also taking upon itself the responsibility of redistributing that private property. Rerum Novarum claims that it's taking away one of the great prerogatives of the church, which is to care for the poor. And by taking away the prerogative to care for the poor, it is the temporal sphere interfering with the religious sphere. There's always been in Western society this split between between church and state, between what the prerogatives of the church are, what the church's role in society is, and what the role of the state and secular leadership, etc., is. And Rerum Novarum really makes the case that socialism disrupts that, and it inserts the state into an area that really is the prerogative of the church, which is the care for the needy, the care for the poor, the taking care of the widows, the orphans, all of the things that we see as these great social programs. Rerum Novarum makes the claim, no, that's the prerogative and place of the church, not the state, which once again, to modern American ears, that sounds fairly radical.
Right. Well, things like, it's interesting too, that you make that point, because really, in paragraph 25 of Rerum Novarum, the Holy Father begins to lay out that the church is our guide. And the reason for that are, there's several of them, of course, listed. It's a magnificent encyclical, but plenty of points. But one example of where the church has a role to play in the political and economic sphere in order is this. It's actually paragraph 13, and all it's pointing to is that man, meaning all people, are prior to the state with a capital S. In other words, the state and the project of the state has to be subordinated to the good of each person. And it's when you invert that relationship, when you make the state with a capital S the top priority, then human beings that we've seen throughout history, projects of like the Soviet Union, communist China, human beings then become the eggs that must be broken and scrambled to make the omelet of the state. And that's where you see all these human right violations is often traced back to this error where man is subordinated to the state instead of what the church teaching upholds, is that the state is subordinated to man. The state serves mankind.
Right. And I don't really think this was, you know, meant in that spirit when he said it, but it really does bring to mind the famous quote by John F. Kennedy, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Rerum Novarum's kind of pointing out that, you know, that attitude to a certain extent is backwards, that man is not here to serve the state, but really kind of on the other side, that the state is really there as an organization to be able to help individuals and help mankind fulfill what our vocations are, and to allow us to act in a truly human way, which is to act truly free and to be able to exercise virtue and to live, you know, according to, I guess, sort of God's plan, which is taught to us by the church. So yeah, you know, Rerum Novarum is kind of saying, yeah, the state is there to sort of support the efforts of the church as the church instructs and helps people to live moral, virtuous lives.
Yeah, there are things that, building off that point, Mark, as the encyclical, unfolds, Rerum Novarum is going to point out things that are truths that as Catholics, you know, I think we might, to term the Declaration of the are self-evident, or we've come to know and claim as true, such as we are made for heaven. Now, if you eclipse that statement, if we're human beings are not made for heaven, well, then you can make all sorts of different political and economic arrangements and arrangements around how one organizes one's moral life. If there is no God, if there is no heaven, if we're not made in the image and likeness of God, then a whole different, a wide range of, I would say, errors begin to appear and people find attractive. You move in the wrong direction. So the church is going to furnish us with these, again, perennial, that I would say is a perennial truth. We are made for heaven. And that the church's life and her teachings and her, especially her magisterial documents, her catechisms, and her institutions are able to, as Rerum Novarum points out, penetrate the human heart and overcome conflicts and create societies in which the common good can be pursued authentically, and the conditions for human flourishing are made more accessible.
Right. Rerum Novarum also points out, and the one of the reasons that the church can play this role is because it really does function as sort of universal society. We do not live in a classless society, and the idea of sort of this dissolving of all classes that's kind of baked into socialism is really sort of an impossible utopian dream. But within real society, you have the church, and within the church, that's where you have a mixing and mingling of all classes. And so, the encyclical very much talks about the role of the church as sort of that mixing place where everybody comes together. So we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about that, of the role that the church plays in regards to the idea of class and a classless society, and how the church can kind of mitigate that.
We'll be back with more on the Catholic Cave right after this.
When you're tired of doing life alone, come back here. We enjoy the company. We hope you do too. Better together. Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here in the studio with Kent Blanford, and we have on the phone with us today Tim O'Donnell, our trusty co-host here. And we've been unpacking and talking about Rerum Novarum as sort of the foundation of Catholic social teaching. And particularly, we started off talking about Rerum Novarum's criticisms of socialism. And now we've moved into the part of Rerum Novarum where it's talking about ideally what the relationship between the church and the state ought to be and what the roles of each of them are. And, this is a part of Rerum Novarum that seems very foreign to our American ears, because we in America have, I think, to a certain extent, recognized certain prerogatives and rights and programs and responsibilities, really, that the government ought to do, that Rerum Novarum claims for the church. Rerum Novarum says, no, the right to take care of the poor, that's the prerogative of the church. It's not the prerogative of the state. And, our politics, to a good extent, we've all sort of universally agreed here in America that, no, the government ought to provide large social welfare programs. And, I think the rest of the West, Europe, European countries, all the countries of the world that have been influenced by Western civilization and therefore have kind of adopted, Western style democracies, they all, I think, also recognize that, no, that the state has to play a large role in providing for the poor, providing for the unemployed, providing for the widows and the orphans. And, Rerum Novarum really seems to go against that grain.
Well, it does. Because again, I think, I'll tell you what Rerum Novarum says in paragraph 23. It talks about socialism is fundamentally wrong. And so that's kind of a big claim. And the reason why it says that is, the reason why it makes that claim is that it makes possession of all property public. And it utterly rejects and injures the very people it seeks to help, which contravenes the natural rights of individual persons and then throws the functions of the state and public peace into confusion. So we have to remember that if we're going to the project of socialism to engage in that, what that's going to encounter is, what you're going to encounter there is, you would have to erect an enormous bureaucracy in order to actually not only take possession of all private property, but then actually go about the project of distributing it or reallocating it. And that requires things like levels of expertise that might be very, very hard to generate. For example, in the Soviet Union, at one point, the Soviet Union was producing something like 20 million different items each year as part of their economy. Now, if you have under the control of the central government, you would need to have a planning board that actually set the that actually attempt to set prices on 20 million different items types of each year and their production level. So the complexity of operating that level of state involves a huge bureaucracy, the cost of operating it, the risk of incompetency of those operating the system, and then the inevitable shortfalls and mistakes that are going to come out. This is why you have things like scarcity of even common goods, because the planning can be poor.
Right, and keep in mind, Rerum Novarum was written in the 1890s, so it was written, 30 years before the final Bolshevik Revolution there in 1917 in Russia. So, the Pope is looking at socialism in a very theoretical standpoint. He wasn't able to kind of pinpoint and look at the way it played out in places like Soviet Russia or even, in China today with a much more managed planned economy. Although China has shed a lot of its, its communist sort of, core there, but it's still a one-party rule, single-party state. So, China's still a socialist nation, but it's socialist in a different way than the Soviet Union was. But nonetheless, the Pope is looking at this to a certain extent without any knowledge of what was eventually going to come to be. But at the same time, it still seems very prophetic. And I think the words of admonition and warning of where societies could go, I think are very appropriate to the United States, even if we don't look at ourselves as, we're going to wind up as Soviet Russia. Even if we don't see that, I think there's still a lot in Rerum Novarum that we can take away and kind of learn from as far as where we shouldn't go.
Yeah, and I'll throw a few out there. I think, again what some of the, I don't find it objectionable, some of the concerns that purported socialists raise. Such it's their solution where I differ. So, for example, workers should be paid a just wage. They should be paid fairly for what they do. There's also concern in Rerum Novarum about safe working conditions. Well, I think we can all find agreement that safe working conditions are important, and that the law should be used to safeguard workers' rights. And so those are things I think just generally we can, as topics, we can engage others in conversation. Yeah, these are topics of importance. It's just that socialism's remedy to those is the big problem.
Right, right. And Rerum Novarum also talks about a particular role of the church that Pope Leo XIII is recommending. And that is, to a certain extent, the church playing the role as sort of a mediating force between the classes. So, socialism, the idea behind Marx is that, one class is naturally going to exploit another class. And so, eventually this is going to result in violence. There's going to be an overthrow of the ruling class by the working class. And then there will be a classless society after that. And, Pope Leo XIII kind of lays out, well, that idea of a classless society is very unnatural. It's not going to happen. But the church has a role to play as sort of a universal society where class differences, at least within the institution of the church, are diminished and go away. And it's really where the rich and the poor of society are able to interact and work together and be together in a place where class makes no difference, where, you know, God is not a respecter of class. The church is not a respecter of class. And so the church has that role of kind of being a mediator where the working class and the ownership class can kind of come together and be in a place where they can mutually support each other and honestly interact in a way that leads to further communication and better working conditions and all of the things that you would expect to come out of a genuine meeting in love between workers and their managers.
Yeah, and towards the end of the encyclical Rerum Novarum, you begin to see that laid out. Here I'm thinking about beginning probably somewhere around paragraph 78 or so, the Holy Mother Church is going to promote associations that are founded upon the principles and teachings of the church. And these associations are going to be adopt missions to do what? To what? Protect the unfortunate in all of the, you know, whether the poor, the disadvantaged, the disabled. It's going to do that. It's also going to, and I think more importantly, and this may become obvious once I share from the encyclical, which is this, who is, in order for us to reach our true end, right, heaven, we're going to need in this life to have religious and moral formation where it's required. Who is going to do that, the state or the church? Well, we want the church to provide the religious and moral formation. So therefore, for mankind to reach our highest end, therefore, there has to be room, a sphere in which, in society, in which Holy Mother Church is free to carry out her mission. And in order to, and therefore the state cannot be absolute, and the project of socialism and communism has proven that those projects engulf all of society and have often proven to be, communism is explicitly atheistic, and socialism is not far away.
Right. And, you know, it does kind of lead to a question of the errors and evils that the Pope is laying out in Rerum Novarum. How much of these are, I guess, differences in kind, and how much of these are differences in degree? In other words, you know, is there this fairly large spectrum of greater, lesser, maybe just a little bit, of evils as we all kind of creep towards socialism, or is socialism its own set system that the Pope is condemning, saying, you know, look, we have a, you know, we live in, you know, at his time, you know, parliamentary democratic systems, and socialism is an entirely different system from that. And so, you know, it would be the overthrow of democratic society that he would be warning against, not a kind of creeping growth of the welfare state that we've kind of seen come into play in Western Europe and the United States.
Well, I think here's what I'm going to lay out. So we've been drawing on from papal encyclicals, well, one in particular today on today's show, Rerum Novarum by Pope Leo XIII, one of the greatest popes we've ever had, especially by the great patrimony of his writings, encyclicals. Rerum Novarum is one of them. But the book is from Tan Book. It's called The Popes Against Modern Errors, 16 Papal Documents. But to answer your question, so Rerum Novarum comes out in 1891, and maybe the topic of an upcoming show, Mark, is we actually have Pope Pius XI, who writes an encyclical called Divine Redemptoris, which is on atheistic communism, and that's promulgated March 19, 1937. So that's about a 20-year anniversary or so of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. And, of course, by 1937, Hitler and the Nazis are in power. And you also have Imperial Japan on the march against Imperial China. So a lot was going on there. So maybe another, and so maybe we'll compare and contrast atheistic communism, as it's outlined by the Holy Father, Pope Pius XI, versus Rerum Novarum, which is on working conditions, with a particular attention given to socialism.
But that will have to be another show, because we are completely out of time for this episode of The Catholic Cave. For Mark Tuttle, for Timothy O'Donnell, I'm Kent Blanford. Until next time, be holy.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.